Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. What is, for instance, a word that has dropped out of the vocabulary, found only in what you would expect to be antiquarian books, but a word of genuine importance to the human race? That word is manliness. And it is a word that has been recovered, at least to some degree in recent days, even in reports about books in the press, because Harvey C. Mansfield, a professor at Harvard University, has written a book entitled Manliness, and he says that the recovery of this virtue is necessary for the health and happiness of the human race. We're going to be talking about this. We're going to make specific reference to what this society does to boys and what it takes as parents to help boys to grow up to be young men, what it takes in the church, in the family, to help young men and boys grow up into manliness, how we avoid the kind of contortions and corruptions that the world would present in terms of masculinity, and how we mold them and give them examples, teachings, and mentors toward true manliness. We're going to talk about the functionality of that manliness in terms of being husband and father, and how we can really help our boys and young men to get there. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. First, to review some issues in the press and in the media. First of all, U.S. News and World Report's cover story this week. The cover story announces science and the soul. New research is challenging our most cherished ideas of self and the human spirit. Now, my guess is this was a fairly risky cover story for U.S. News. Not because it is so controversial, but because I don't know how many Americans are actually going to read through an essay like this. It's a pretty stalwart, substantial essay on the current debate over the nature of human consciousness. Now, if you don't think this interests you, I'm going to suggest that it should, because this gets to the very question of who we are as human beings. Are we simply physical entities? In other words, when we talk about emotion, we talk about intellect, we talk about personality, we talk about belief in God, we use words like soul and spirit, are we simply talking about what is actually no more than a chemical process in the biological engine of the brain? Because that's exactly where the new reductionistic science is taking us. The new reductionistic science is suggesting that we are basically chemical machines, and that everything from our moral sense to our relational ability is nothing more than the process of chemical actions and reactions in the brain. It's nothing more than physicalism. That's the right word for it. We're just physicalists. And so there is a rejection among many who are scientists and in the philosophical community of what we as Christians call soul and spirit. Now, there is also a criticism in their research and in their theorizing of what they call dualism. Dualism is held by philosophers such as Rene Descartes and even long before him, the Greek philosopher Plato, who said there's a basic distinction between mind and body. Well, most of us know that the Christian truth claim concerning what it means to be human is that we are both body and soul. We are spiritual beings and we are embodied beings. We are ensouled beings and we are physical beings. And yet, we as Christians have to understand that there has to be more than the mere physical. There is no way to reconcile this new reductionistic view of the soul with the Christian truth claim. Let me read from Jay Tolson's story. This is the cover story in USA Today. He says this: a mind is a tough thing to think about. Consciousness is the defining feature of the human species. But is it possible that it is also no more than an extravagant biological add-on, something not really essential to our survival? He goes on, and he's actually right about this. He says there's something troubling, if not downright offensive, about an effort to reduce human consciousness to the operations of a 3-pound chunk of wrinkled brain tissue. That's right. He says such reductionist thinking seems like an assault on the last readout of the soul, or at least the seat of the irreducible self. Now, that's his explanation. That's not his own theorizing. It's clear that Mr. Tolson has some sympathies with these new understandings of the soul. For instance, when we're talking about what this kind of physicalism looks like, let's just refer to the late Francis Crick. You may remember that he won the Nobel Prize along with Watson for discovering the structure of DNA in terms of the human body and the very source and substance of life in terms of the biological material and the genetic code. But Mr. Crick in his book entitled The Astonishing Hypothesis, said this: the astonishing hypothesis is that you, your joys and your sorrows, your memories and your ambitions, your sense of personal identity and free will are in fact no more than the behavior of a vast assembly of nerve cells and their associated molecules. Folks, it's very useful, actually, for U.S. News to have written this cover story. It's interesting. I think it was fairly risky. I don't know how many Americans are going to look at this and say, I'm going to pick up this copy of the magazine, this issue of the magazine. But it's of interest to us because it reminds us that the Christian truth claim is not just about how we are to live in terms of behavior. And it's not just about, for instance, where we came from. It's also about who we are. And the who we are is really, really important. And the Bible does present us as both embodied and ensouled creatures uniquely made in the image of God. Now, the important thing here is if the physicalists are right, there is no God. This comes right out of the Darwinian worldview. And furthermore, thoughts about God are nothing more than evolutionary thoughts that are, for instance, helpful to the continuation of the species. Somehow, that chemical reaction that produces belief in God, or that genetic structure that inclines toward belief in God, is evidently an evolutionary advantage. Now, that's exactly what we've been reading about from folks like Daniel Dennett and Richard Dawkins, although both of them are also now assured and confident that if it was at one time an evolutionary advantage, it has now become an evolutionary disadvantage. We need to remember that the Christian truth claim, based in the Scripture, tells us that we are indeed both body and soul. And we need to be always reminded that when Christians are told about the age to come, and we are not talking about a disembodied state of redeemed spirits in heaven. We are talking about resurrected bodies, glorified bodies, soul and body perfectly combined throughout eternity. I think it's probably a good point for us just to remember that that the Bible does not tell us that we are going to survive merely in spirit, but also in body. You know, in our litigious society, there are people who are afraid of just about everything. The Wall Street Journal reports that trial lawyers have made it almost impossible for many community swimming clubs and nonprofit swimming clubs to have diving boards, even a 3-meter diving board. Reporter Steve Moore of the Wall Street Journal says that at his community country club in Fairfax County, Virginia, the insurance premiums on its 3-meter diving board are so high it has come down. The boys at the club won't get to drench nearby sunbathers with their cannonballs, watermelons, or other splashy dives. The girls can't practice their graceful twisting somersaults, nor is my local pool the only one affected, he says. This is what he goes on to say. Diving boards are disappearing across our country and new pools are being built without them. Ask why, and you're told it is to protect the children. Now get this. Mr. Moore decided to do a little investigation. There are people hurt in pools. 50,000 persons are injured in swimming pools each year. But only 20 of those, reported on insurance statistics, were injured on diving boards. Now, Mr. Moore is making a point here, and that is that we are making childhood almost legally impossible. And we're taking away even the diving board from the swimming pool because in our litigious society, we're going to try to keep people from getting hurt. Therefore, school lunchrooms are now found without peanut butter. And toy soldiers are now without guns. This goes along with pools without diving boards. Mr. Moore says, these precautions may not make our children any safer. Kids, especially boys, like to take chances. If they can't launch themselves from the high dive, they'll take some other risk. Boys will be boys, he says, whether the lawyers like it or not. Pills are taking the place of parenting in far too many cases. Elizabeth J. Roberts writes about this in the Washington Post. She says this, a temper tantrum is not a psychiatric disorder. Yet she realizes that many of her psychiatric colleagues are defining and diagnosing children as having serious mental illnesses simply because they are misbehaving. She calls this ordinary defiance and misbehavior now reclassified as mental illness. From her article, she says this, after observing and talking to kids for as little as 20 minutes, psychiatrists are diagnosing them with bipolar disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and Asperger's, and medicating kids with powerful psychiatric drugs that may have serious, permanent, or even lethal side effects. From 1991 to 2000, prescriptions for medications for ADHD increased 500%. She asked this question, what's behind the startling rise? And she answers it, it's easier to label a kid and medicate him than to confront the real problem, which she says are often poor parenting practices. She says the loser in this entire equation is the child who is diagnosed as being mentally ill. And this is one psychiatrist I think we all need to hear because Elizabeth Roberts, writing in the Washington Post, says that when we get our children diagnosed with these mental illnesses, just as a way of trying to deal with them perhaps by chemicals, this diagnosis lasts with them throughout life. A lot of parents don't take that into consideration. In Britain, they're trying to regulate exactly what children can bring to school in their lunches. They want healthy lunches, and now you can have only one bad snack per child per day. Ryan Stuffles was forced to eat in the headmaster's office at Lunsford Primary School in Kent because his lunch contained two snacks instead of one. His father said this: what 10-year-old boy won't get upset when he's out of a dining hall in front of everyone and made to eat his lunch in the head teacher's office? Yes, that sounds for any boy like sheer torture. But when you look at the food that they want these kids to eat, well, the reports coming out of Great Britain are you can put healthy food in front of the kid, but if there's something else, he's gonna eat it. Parents, you knew this already. We'll be right back.
I'm dying in your bed many years from now. Would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
Every man in America knows the film already. That is Mel Gibson playing the part of William Wallace, Braveheart, in the movie of that title. And that is the climactic scene when they're on the field of battle. Braveheart goes before his men to inspire them to fight the British. It's one of the great moments in terms, I think, of recent cinema, in terms of making the point that honor sometimes comes down to the necessity to fight for freedom, to fight for that which is precious. And that is a manly declaration. It's made by a man playing the part of a man in the company of men, in which he is seeking to inspire them to remember who they are and to act in a manly manner. And there are people all over the world today who would laugh at that. At least there are people all over the modern world of the progressive postmodern elites who would laugh at that. And yet, the reason why we are attracted to language like that is because we know that civilization eventually depends upon it. And, the person who thinks that this is unimportant needs only to consider what would happen if there were no virtues such as this kind of manliness at the very foundation of a culture. Well, number one, we wouldn't have this kind of freedom, and we wouldn't even have this kind of understanding. And furthermore, we would be left completely adrift in answering the question, what is a boy to grow up to be? And not only a boy here, because there are a lot of boys who are in their 30s and 40s and 50s. But what is a man to grow up to be in terms of manliness? Very interesting statement here. Harvey C. Mansfield, professor at Harvard University, one of my favorite scholars in America, he says this, that it was his wife who, interpreting Aristotle, reminded him that the difference between manliness and the lack of manliness is the difference between merely saying something and asserting it. In other words, anyone can say something, she said, but only a man can assert it. It is a manly assertion. This is not saying that women never are able to assert anything. It is saying that it's the very essence of a man. To be willing in the face of resistance to assert something, to assert it verbally, to assert it with his authority, to take risk, even to assert it when virtue demands it, with a willingness to fight. Now, I realize that all across America today, there are people who have been running from this kind of virtue. And we should not be surprised, by the way, that what we have in the wake of that flight from manliness is a generation of young men trying to figure out what it looks like. And that generation of young men is reverting either to a form of almost bestial crudeness, just trying to prove that they are boys and not girls, or they are they're turning just soft and unwilling to stand for anything. You know, the Harvey Mansfield book is entitled Manliness. It got a lot of attention in the press. But the book by Walter R. Newell, entitled What is a Man, really gets to this. In his introduction, he talks about the flight from manliness in our culture. He says, we don't need to reinvent manliness. We only need to will ourselves to wake up from the bad dream of the last few generations and reclaim it in order to extend and enrich that tradition under the formidable demands of the present. He goes on to speak about this in particular. He says manliness or maleness still exists, but in a baffled, confused kind of way. This is especially noticeable when students open up about their erotic relationships. He's a college professor. He says young men and women today face all the traditional quandaries of love that you will sample. in life, more or less. Jealousy, possessiveness, wounded pride, shame, competition for female attention and affection. But they lack the vocabulary even to express these feelings, let alone grapple with them constructively. He calls this male romantic bafflement. And this is the fact there's so many women who are waiting for young men to take the lead in a romantic relationship, but the men simply don't know how to do it. They are baffled about what they are to do. They have neither the models nor the teaching on this. He says this: it is both appalling and deeply touching to see how many young men, even into their 30s, are still so badly hurt by the childhood horror of watching their families disintegrate. It doesn't incline them to trust that love can last. They fear that by saying, I love you, they're making themselves vulnerable to another betrayal like the one inflicted upon them by their parents. So, in other words, I think Newell's making the very good point that one of the enemies of manliness is the breakup of the home and the absence of the father. Lots of stuff in here that is really worth our attention. And today we're looking at this simply because it's back in the news again. It's back in conversation because the gender issues seem never to be very far from us. We are at the point in this culture where every day, one way or another, we are confronting confusion over gender roles, over whether there is a difference between girls and boys, men and women, and over whether there is a different role for men and women in society. And if we as adults find this, well, baffling, and even fatiguing when it comes to the amount of this material and the volume of this challenge, imagine where our children are. Walter Newell again says this. He says, the point is to channel energies in the development of character. Boys and young men still want to be heroes, and the way to teach them to treat girls and women with respect is to appeal to their heroism, not to try to blot it out. Therefore, by the way, the Braveheart clip. Says this: look at how these kids are performing daring flips on their skateboards or sailing on their rollerblades into downtown traffic like warriors contemptuous of fear or danger. Look at the squeegee kid with a shaved head and horsehair plume, checked out, decked out like some road warrior Achilles. Walk into one of those high-voltage computer emporiums selling our country's most potent icon for the extension of human mastery over the cosmos. Who are the salespeople? Almost always cocky young men, celebrities in waiting in dark suits and moosed hair, hooked on the sheer power of it all. It's going to get channeled in the right way or the wrong way, says Walter Newell, and he's exactly right. What does the absence of the father or the absence of father figures and the absence of heroes in the society mean? I quote him again. Having failed to find an authority they can respect, someone to guide them from boyish impetuosity to a mature and manly vigor of judgment, they confuse authority with oppression. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. The question is this: what are you doing in your home, in your family, in your church, in your circle of acquaintances to help young men reclaim manliness? Or do you think this is simply a backward, retrograde suggestion? You know, one of the most interesting parts of Henry C. Mansfield's new book on manliness is that the very use of the term is an affront to a gender-neutral society. And yet the reality is that even though in our law, and as we've already heard this week in our kindergartens, we're trying to have a gender-neutral society, humanity is just too stubbornly made as male and female to ignore the obvious. But if we try to ignore the obvious, and we thus fail to teach or misteach our children, especially our young men, we should not be surprised when what comes out is a corrupted, reduced, sometimes crude and dangerous form of masculinity found among young males who are trying to figure out what it means to be male and not female, to be a boy and not a girl, to be a man and not a woman. There is glory in the man and there is glory in the woman. There is glory in true masculinity and there is glory in true femininity. There are women who are brave and courageous. I can't think of many things more brave and courageous than giving birth to the next generation. But there is a particular kind of bravery that is called for in men. We either teach it and encourage it, or we raise a generation of young men and boys who are baffled as to what it means to be male. What they lack is an understanding of the virtue our forefathers called manliness. And in times past, not only did the fathers teach it, but the mothers expected it, honored it, and inculcated it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. A society at war with manliness. How do we respond? We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Let me just ask you to do a little thought experiment right now. Just imagine the last time you heard or used the word manly before we, for instance, took it up in this program today. I mean, when was the last time you heard someone say that was a very manly act? Or you heard him say that he was acting in a very manly manner. You know, that was manly of him. That's the kind of language that we used to use because it used to mean something. And the absence of manliness, or even the category of manliness, is a symptom of our gender confusion, and it is injurious to the entire culture, but especially to the youngest males. Boys and young men trying to figure out what they're supposed to look like, how they're supposed to act, how they're supposed to relate to women, how they're supposed to show valor. And, you know, I love what Walter Newell has to say. Look, you know, these kids are taking risks all the time. They're running out in the middle of traffic in their skateboards. They're jumping out of airplanes on surfboards. They're doing all kinds of things. They're trying to demonstrate what this means, but it's not being channeled by the society into true manliness, but rather into more crude and just episodic, fairly dangerous, or even laughable forms of corrupted masculinity. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We are facing a culture at war with manliness. How do we respond? Let's go to Nikki calling from Omaha, Nebraska. Go ahead, Nikki.
Hi. Your screener said to just share one sentence, but I thought of one other thing, so if I can add that at the end. My husband just spends time with our boys. He wrestles them. He reads to them. He prays with them. And the other thing I was thinking of was just what I've started doing is calling up advertisers in our area because I'm so tired of seeing advertisements that are always aimed at girls. And I tell them, and I've actually had two advertisers change now, because I say, you know, I have sons, and I'm so tired of seeing your ads slanted always towards girls or towards women, and the woman's always the strong one in the ad, and the guy's the one that's serving the lemonade. And the woman's on the ladder with
the politically correct stuff. Let me ask you, Nikki, how old are your sons?
They're 6 and 4.
Okay. Do they know they're boys?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes, they do.
Yeah, they figured that out a long time ago, I'm sure. Now let me ask you, when you start hearing this kind of stuff out there, and you hear Waller Newell and Harvey Mansfield talking about the confusion of young men, do you see your own sons as vulnerable in terms of how the culture is presenting masculinity? You kind of mentioned it with the advertising, but, I mean, do you feel like all of a sudden you have to be protective of them as boys?
Yeah, I think we're so much already probably not politically correct that we're probably like bulls in a china closet sometimes, I suppose, because we just – I don't know. We just affirm them in the other direction. I homeschool, so maybe that makes a difference.
I think the very fact that you're talking like this and you're concerned about this, and they have a dad who loves them in the home as well as the mom, and you're aware of this, I think they're going to be in great shape. I think the problem is the millions of boys who don't have, you know, a mom and a dad that have this concern for them, and you know, are out there very vulnerable, perhaps literally fatherless and mentorless in a society that is telling them that manliness is the problem, not the solution. Thanks so much for your call, Nikki. God bless you, your husband, and your boys. Let's go to Gina, listening on WHCB, calling from Johnson City, Tennessee. Go ahead, Gina.
Hi, Dr. Mohler. I really appreciate your program. I'm raising two boys on my own. One's 10, the other one's 13, and I do as much as I can to inject manliness, masculinity into their lives. But I'm trying to figure out, I can't really put my finger on where the anti-masculine mentality is coming from, because it is a real attack on our youth.
Yeah, I think the blame game here has got to be played toward the feminists, because it is a feminist ideology that says that masculinity is the problem because it's always oppressive and always always dangerous to women. I mean, that literally, you know, that some of the feminist languages is of testosterone as the enemy, males as the enemy, and masculinity as the demonstration of what that looks like. And, you know, I think Harvey Mansfield's exactly right in his book Manliness when he says the goal of so many in this society is a truly gender-neutral society. But the problem is that even the feminists really don't want it gender-neutral. They're pushing for a real advantage for women in many cases, because they think that even historically women have been oppressed and all the rest. And so what you have is a strange mix in which it is all right. It's politically correct for a woman to be served by a man in the commercial, but it's not politically correct for it to be the other way around. And so we have a complete inversion here. It's like the worst of all possible worlds. And, you know, we have enough problem in this society with corrupted femininity, but we can't have, and I say this emphatically, we can't have a true and honest and balanced understanding of women if we do not have a true and balanced understanding of men and boys and masculinity. Gina, you asked the key question. The problem is found where people think manliness is the problem rather than the solution. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're talking about a return to manliness. And let me just offer an insight here. Perhaps you've noticed this as well. The program is on manliness, on the recovery of manliness among boys and young men. And we ask the question, what are you doing out there? And God bless them, we've had calls from women. Now, that tells me something. It tells me that women out there are truly concerned with a lack of manliness among men. I just want to know, are men concerned about this? I hope you are. The number 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Harvey Mansfield says the difference between the lack of manliness and the presence of manliness is the willingness to make an assertion. So here comes an assertion. Men who are afraid to talk about manliness need to learn what manliness is all about. Maybe the problem starts right at home. 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. You know, this whole problem, it's documented so much in the literature. By the way, right now, a report out of Great Britain yesterday that boys in the what you would call the high school equivalent in Great Britain are 7 grades behind the girls in achievement. 7! In this country, you have boys falling further and further behind academically. And one of the reasons why is because boys see no particular purpose to this. They're falling further and further behind. They're less likely than girls to graduate from college. They are less likely to do well in high school. They are less likely to stay on task. And it's because I think we have robbed them of the expectation and of the cultural support to demonstrate their manliness in terms of growing into manhood, taking the responsibility, learning how to take the right risk for the right reason, learning how to find pleasure in genuine accomplishment, and learning how to lead. And this problem is bleeding over into families and bleeding over into marriages where men simply aren't leading. All right, I think the guys have decided to call. Dave's calling from Jacksonville, Florida, listening on XM 170. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, how you doing today?
Doing great. Glad to hear from you.
Well, let me just tell you, I've got 2 boys, 6 and 10 years old, and as a father and as a dad, absolutely, we are very aware of this. And, you know, we take every opportunity we can to show them what it's really like to be a man.
All right, Dave, help me. How do you do that? I've got a 14-year-old son, and I've given this a lot of attention and obviously a matter of personal concern. I've written a work entitled From Boy to Man, The Marks of Manhood, which, by the way, is found in downloadable form at albertmohler.com. I've given this a lot of thought, but I'm learning all the time, Dave. How are you doing that with your boys?
Well, there's several things that we do, Albert. First, I show them what the respect for what women is. Like, I'm very happily married to my wife. I show them the affection, how much I love her every day. We hug, we kiss, we say prayers together. I still open the door for my wife in the cars. So, you know, they see that. And I've got an older daughter that I actually, you know, make my son open the door for her, too. So they gain the respect for them quickly.
Well, I think that's great. Dave, let me ask you another question. Are your boys, let's put it this way. Just imagine for a moment that you weren't really concerned about this. Would your boys pick up the wrong idea of masculinity from the culture around them?
Oh, they would have no option. I mean, we're just, you know, submersed in everything we do. And you know, we do a lot of things too we really don't watch much TV. It's just the way our lifestyle is. When I get home from work or something, we're outside, we're playing, we're jumping on the trampoline, and, you know, we're having our interaction that way. So, yeah. You know, there's a lot that we can do as a family to combat that.
Yeah, I think you have to realize you are an oppositional culture here, a counterculture, and you and your wife together are basically rescuing your children from the confusions of a very toxic culture around them. God bless you for doing so, Dave, and thanks for calling. Let's go to Rod calling from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Go ahead, Rod.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I don't believe it's masculinity. I believe it's chivalry. Chivalry, masculinity to me is, I work construction, right, and that's considered masculine, but the guys that work with computers and things like that aren't considered masculine. I believe it's chivalry because that was a code. It was a code of honor, and it didn't matter whether you were speaking to women or men, there was a certain code with chivalry.
It sounds like you've kind of read up on this, Rod. Tell me, how does that function in your life, and if you do or if you did have a son, how would you help him to become chivalrous?
Well, when I was... My parents taught me, when I was raised, you open the door for a lady, and when it came to dealing with other men, too, there was a code of ethics, all right? There was honor involved in it, and I believe that's where society has a problem nowadays, is the honor is gone. Anything goes,
and that's
what I believe.
You know, I can tell you, as one who works with hundreds and hundreds of young men on an academic campus, I can tell you that I can't tell exactly which boy had a dad and which boy didn't, but I can generalize that. I can tell you that there are just an awful lot of young men who don't even know how to shake a man's hand. They don't know how to look a man in the eye. And that's just a part of manliness, you know, learning how to do that, learning how to stand on your own two feet. And you know, I would say, Rod, you're exactly right. You got the stereotype exactly right. You're in construction. And no one's going to claim that's a wimpy job. But I'm going to say the guy working behind the computer, he may be a warrior, too, in his own way. And like you say, I appreciate the fact that you got to make that clear. And we've got to raise boys to know that it's a matter of character and heart. Let's go to Osama. Usama, calling from Tampa, Florida. Listen to WTBN. Usama, go right ahead.
Yes, my comment was, we as Christian in Egypt, we have no problem with the manhood. And we know our role as a man. But in the United States, we don't, and the reason is we in the United States, we left the Bible and forgot the great role which God has put in the Scripture. We don't read in the United States about Moses. We don't know anything about Joshua. We don't know anything about all the men in the Scripture. We don't know about young Timothy. We don't know anything about Paul or Peter or all. So this is a big problem. We left the Scripture, and the Scripture really has the great guide and the big role of men as a husband and wife, what the Bible teach about the man role, and so on and so on. This is just a quick comment.
God bless you. What a great quick comment. You know, you want to find manliness? Yes, look in the Bible. And I just love the names you just mentioned. And just go to Hebrews chapter 11, and you've got this great, great line of faithful, brave, and courageous men. What an amazing thing. And thank you so much for directing us just that way. And, you know, the last thing we need to do with Joshua is turn him into a singing vegetable. We need to be showing our boys and young men. If you got VeggieTales, that's fine. But let's not just laugh about it. Let's understand what happened here at the Battle of Jericho. What happened when Joshua led the children of Israel to cross the River Jordan? What did God tell Joshua in Joshua chapter 1 again and again? Be strong and take courage, for the Lord your God goes before you. Now, that's manliness, and that's manly submission to the call and command of God. The phone number is 877-893-8255. This is the Albert Mohler Program, and we'll be right back. So big a topic, so little time. We're going to try to get these calls in here at the very end. Let's go to Brent calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Brent.
Yeah, my comment is that it's always been a struggle as Christians as to how to bring up our children in a world which is going to be anti-Christian, whether that be to the barbaric side of things or whether that be to the feministic side of things. They will always try to pull our kids away from what it means to be a truly godly man.
Good point. And you're exactly right. When you look through history, it's been hard in different ways. I do think, though, Brent, even though I grant you your point that it's in one way or another at many points in history, There is a particularly toxic form of anti-masculinity out there right now that I see as a true challenge. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Deanne calling from Boone, Iowa, listening on KFFF. Go ahead, Deanne.
Hi, Mr. Mahler. I just wanted to bring up the point that I know the definition of man has changed years over years over years, but I think the biggest impact was when the women's movement started, and they were changing the definition of what they wanted in a man, and it seemed to go downhill from there. And then, again, accelerated as the gay community became more involved in changing the definitions of what a family should be.
Yeah, you know, in the homosexual community, for instance, there are subcultures, one that leans towards a hyper-masculinity and the other towards a minimization of masculinity. It's just a symptom, I think, of the confusion that's at the heart there, a confusion that should move our hearts as well as our minds to be concerned there. Thank you, Deanne. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Jerry calling from McMinnville, Oregon. Go ahead, Jerry.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. My wife and I have four boys. They're 6, 4, and twins that are 2. And we realized that we have one shot at raising our boys. And so our focus is entirely on teaching them about life. And every chance I get, I'm spending time with the boys. I'm running the hardware store. I'm taking 1, 2, 3, or 4 of them with me. And when I'm mowing the lawn, they're helping me, learning how to mow. I wrestle with them each night. I read stories to them. We talk about life. We talk about how to take care of mom, how to look out for ladies. And we've got one shot to raise them, and we're going to make our time count and focus our lives on teaching them about life and teaching them about God.
What a dad. Jerry, I want to be there to see the 2-year-old mow. I know exactly what you were talking about there, and our hearts were moved by your example, and I think it's exactly right. My dad took me with him, and I love being able to go with him. And yeah, the hardware store, now there's a place where men can hang out. All right, folks, we've had a lot of good suggestions. Jerry had some right there, and it's just a reminder to us again that we do have one shot, and that dads are really important. Moms, too. Let's hold up examples of manliness, and let's remember, when a boy doesn't have a father, the church had better be a father unto him. I'll meet you next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation. I'm Albert Mohler.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.